Vous êtes sur Art District Radio et c'est l'heure de retrouver Luke Seabright dans Jazz Interview pour une rencontre en anglais avec un artiste de jazz. Passez un très bon moment sur Art District.
Hi there, I'm Luke Seabright and you're listening to Art District Radio. This is our jazz interview program and today I have on the phone with me Jerry Roach. Jerry is a jazz historian with a track record of researching and promoting jazz music. He worked for 13 years with the Blue Note subsidiary Mosaic Records and today he heads Dot Time Records Legend Series, which features previously unreleased recordings by great jazz legends such as Ella Fitzgerald and Jerry Mulligan. Over the next 2 years, Dot Time will be releasing 4 recordings by Louis Armstrong. The first volume, The Standard Oil Sessions, is due to be released this month and is available for purchase on the Dot Time Records website. Jerry, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Luke. I really appreciate it.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say, and I think I'm probably speaking for many here, just how really excited I am at the prospect of, you know, getting to hear so much new material from Louis. And I'd like to thank you and all those at Dot Time for the fantastic work you're doing. I can only imagine that this has been an equally, like, a particularly exciting and rewarding project for you too.
It really is. It is the proverbial labor of love when you can put out music by probably the preeminent jazz musician of the 20th century and bring him with the technology of this century with unreleased music. It's an amazing project.
Before we continue on the Armstrong volumes, I'd love to know a bit more about the Legend series and the work that you do for Dot Time.
I am the director of the Dot Time Legends series, and I pick and I put together the music with the amazing engineer Lou Jimenez, and then we have Joe Bickart, who owns and runs the label, and then Andrew Reed, who does the design work. And if you've seen the design work for Legend, it's great branding. It looks very cool. And so I pick the projects and which ones do you want to know about specifically?
Well, I guess what artists so far have you been releasing some previously unissued recordings for?
Okay, we had an Ella Fitzgerald concert from 1968 live in upstate New York. And we put out, that was the first release, volume one was the first release on Legends. And the second release was a living artist, Chuck Israel's new jazz ensemble. He's one of the unheralded bass players. He played with George Russell and Bill Evans. But he ran a band from, I think, 1975 to 1981 or 82, mm-hmm. a big band in New York, and then they would bring in guest soloists from time to time. And talking to Chuck, we talked about they have a Bud Johnson and a Tommy Flanagan that we may end up putting out. But when he mentioned Jerry Mulligan, for me, that's the way to hear Jerry Mulligan, is in a big band ensemble, and it was fantastic. So we decided to make that the second one. The third one, it's coincidental that you called today. I will be leaving in a couple of hours to go see a Joe Bushkin centennial concert run by his son-in-law, Bob Merrill, a fine trumpet player in his own right.
Fantastic.
And, yeah, it's from 1952. It was recorded on an old, I think, Ampex with one wire going to the stage. And not only is it Joe Bushkin, who is an underrated pianist, mm-hmm. but his band is Buck Clayton on trumpet, Milt Hinton on bass, and Joe Jones on drums. Mm-hmm. So that's amazing. And then we just released the second volume of The Ella Show a week ago. And then we have The Louie.
The Louie indeed, which I guess it's time to talk about now, since the next four releases from Legends will all be recordings from Louis Armstrong. It's the next four, if I'm not mistaken.
It won't be all, they won't be consecutive, but we have some contracts that we're working out. There will be other possibilities in between.
Okay.
But, yeah. The Louie will be coming out on May 12th.
Yeah.
With amazing liner notes by Ricky Riccardi, who, for me, is the preeminent scholar on Armstrong. And I feel very honored that he agreed to work with us because he knows everything.
Yeah, he knows Armstrong intimately. I've read the liner notes. They're fantastic. Ricky Riccardi also has a blog, incidentally, on Louis Armstrong that I strongly recommend checking out for anybody who's interested in Armstrong's legacy. The Armstrong Project, what sort of made you seek out that material, and how were you able to kickstart the project?
It's actually just a simple story. I had just finished working on the release of the first Ella Fitzgerald, and having heard all of the music on Ella's, I felt like I went into my collection and grabbed the Ella and Louie record, and I put on the disc and I was listening to Stars Fell from Alabama, and I just heard how great they were together, and I said to myself, the collection is right in Queens College, and I live in just outside of New York City. I said, let me call Ricky and set up a time to go listen to stuff. And I put together a few things that, you know, you hear rumors that this is there and that's there. And Ricky's been a great friend to this project from the beginning. And he hipped me to some great stuff that I didn't know about. And we listened to, you know, a blend of the stuff that I knew about and what he could unearth. And from there, I came up with my proposal for the Louis Armstrong Educational Foundation. Mm-hmm. And then we just started negotiating. And I was lucky enough to get a licensing agreement with them for four, with an option for two more.
Oh, fantastic. So the Educational Foundation owns the copyright to all his personal archive?
Well, they run I don't know how to say it. You get the license agreement with them.
Okay.
And then you're able to use the material, which is from Lewis's own personal collection.
Okay. Well, we're so lucky that that agreement came to be because, yeah, as you say, four albums to look forward to with a potential extra two. The first volume is called The Standard Oil Sessions, and you said that is due to be released on May 12th. Could you tell us a bit more about that particular recording, who was involved, and how it fits into the chronology of Armstrong's career?
Sure. It's a little past 2 years from when he started the All-Stars. And it's really what makes this a special listen for Louis Armstrong fans is it's kind of an anomaly from what he was doing at the time in relation to personnel. We have done exhaustive research, and we cannot tell who the bass player or the drummer is. And this was going to be recorded for the Standard Oil Company and then broadcast on the radio, but for some reason it never happened. So this was recorded live, but it was recorded live in the studio. So you have the amazing Jack Teagarden on trombone and Earl Hines on piano. So those are the two stalwarts from the All-Stars. And then there's a shadowy figure called Lyle Johnson on clarinet, who never played with Louis Armstrong before this date and never played with him after. So it's a pseudonym for somebody who we can't figure out.
Yeah, I having read the liner notes for the album, I recall Ricky mentioning that there's a photo from the period where you see the band leader Sammy Kay holding a clarinet by a microphone, and so he speculates that maybe Sammy Kay was incognito. It's quite fascinating.
Yeah, I think a little tongue in cheek.
Of course, yes.
Know, that's
but...
really, yeah, I think that might be the only lead we had.
Yeah. No, it's but fascinating still to this day we don't know who the three are.
Right, and Ricky and I and my old boss at Mosaic, Michael Cascuna, we've all tried to figure out who the bass player and the drummer were, trying to work our way back from some of the trad bands that were in San Francisco at the time and thinking maybe, you know, Lou Waters, somebody from that band, or Bob Scobie, something like that, but nothing definitive. And there's actually on the Standard Oil Sessions, you get two alternate takes of Do you know what it means to miss New Orleans? And you can hear Teagarden and Armstrong teaching the song to Lyle Johnson on the clarinet a little bit. It's fantastic.
So one thing I'm curious about is that Armstrong obviously famously recorded hundreds of tapes, you know, represents hours and hours of material in his personal collection. And ultimately, you were required to choose material for four, potentially six albums. So I imagine that must have been quite difficult. And yeah, so what was your approach to selecting, and how did you go about that?
Well, for me, I thought no matter when the contract got signed, working with a live to the studio recording would be the easiest to take into the studio and work with Lou Jimenez, because there'd be no crowd noise, or not very much crowd noise. I mean, if you hear the music, there's people applauding and stuff, but there's not the openness of a club and whistling or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I thought that would be the easiest one to do first off.
In fact, one thing that's quite exceptional about this album is that, as you say, it very much has the feel and the quality of a studio album, which the All-Stars of that period recorded very few of.
Right, and we were lucky enough from Louis' collection to get a transfer from the original acetates that were handed to Louis Armstrong. And you can see on the acetate a little yellowed handwritten thing by Louis that says recorded. Mm-hmm. And then there's tape over it. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's fantastic to see something like that. But we were very lucky that the acetate, which sounds okay, that we were able to do such a good job, and the sound quality is fantastic, in my opinion, for a 67-year-old acetate.
Yeah, I mean, I was curious to ask you about what sort of the main challenges you were faced with when sort of remastering the tapes and preparing them for release, and it sounds as if a lot of the process is just sort of selecting the music that, you know, has the highest sound quality and is the most suited for release. But I mean, are there other like important steps in remastering?
Right, but there's also some stuff that you hear it and you have to say, even if I have to spend extra time in the studio with that cut was just so amazing that it's going to be worth it to let Armstrong fans hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is stuff like that. I mean, we dealt with, for the Standard Oil one, on the acetate, there's a lot of pops and anomalies like that, and we were able to work it out, and that has a lot to do with Lou Jimenez. And, you know, just sitting in the studio, we really did a fair amount of good work to get it to sound the way it does. But the next release, which will probably be late October, is my guess, we're whittling down what we're going to put on it, but it'll be a combination of different club dates from the early 50s.
So is this still with Teagarden and Hines, or is this after their departure?
It'll be some of that, but I want to highlight all different periods of the All-Stars. So there'll be the Teagarden Hines on it, but then it'll be some of the Edmund Hall as mm-hmm. well. And both Ricky and I are huge fans of Edmund Hall.
Yeah.
And when I had my own little small label, Mighty Quinn Productions, I re-released an old United Artist Edmund Hall, which is no longer available, called Petite Fleur, which was a fantastic record. So I'm a big Edmund Hall fan, so I wanted to kind of incorporate him playing with Armstrong as well.
Fantastic. Well, I really look forward to that. Sadly, we don't have that much time left, so I want to ask one last question because I'm quite curious to know if, well, you know, you've been lucky enough to dive deeply into, you know, this wealth of content that Armstrong recorded. Most of them, I presume you were hearing, most of these tapes you were hearing for the first time. So
absolutely.
Do you feel like you discovered anything new or unexpected about Louis, a new side to him, or is there anything that really surprised you in what you found there?
Well, not necessarily surprised me, but I think there's a preconceived notion that when Armstrong was doing these all-star bands, that he was coasting and he wasn't really playing, or he was just kind of like going through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
But just on the Standard Oil alone, between Muskrat Ramble, Strutting with Some Barbecue, Panama, and Back O' Town Blues, if you've heard them on this record, I mean, he is really taking some chances and has some amazing solos.
And he's in phenomenal form on the album. It's an absolute treat. I couldn't recommend it highly enough. Whether you're a knowledgeable Armstrong connoisseur or an Armstrong neophyte, this is an album you must listen to. It's phenomenal. Jerry, thank you so much for being here. That's all we have time for, I'm afraid.
Luke, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, as I said before.
Once again, that was Jerry Roach, a jazz historian, head of Dot Time Legends series. The first volume is available to order on the Dot Time website. As I said, it's an absolute delight. I couldn't recommend it highly enough. The best part is, it's only the start. There's plenty more to look forward to. I'm Luke Seabright, and that was our jazz interview program for Art District Radio. Thank you.
C'était Jazz Interview avec Luke Seabright. Vous pouvez écouter cette émission les mardis et jeudis à 8h et 14h et retrouver tous nos podcasts sur notre site internet artdistrict-radio.com. Très belle journée à notre écoute.
I hear you talking.